Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Ken Pai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So this is the final episode from my MetaConnect 2025 coverage. If you want to see some of the other like dozen interviews that I did at MetaConnect to see some of the other news that's more specific to what's happening at MetaConnect this year, then definitely check out episode 1652 on up until this episode is my coverage of all the different events and things that are happening this year at MetaConnect 2025. So today's episode is with the CEO and co-founder of VRChat, Graham Gaylor. So VRChat, I think, is probably one of the most successful social VR experiences that are out there, especially in terms of both the community that they've been able to cultivate with over like 100,000 people, peak concurrency, but also just some of the different ways that VRChat has been this hub for innovation when it comes to user-generated content for avatar creation. But they also had some layoffs last June, and so where they laid off 30% of their staff. And so this is the first interview I had a chance to do with the CEO and co-founder, Graham Gaylor, in quite a while. There was for a while from like 2014 to 2019, I would run into Graham Gaylor or Jesse Jodry on the festival circuit and kind of catch up and get some updates as to what was happening with VRChat. And so it's sort of been since the pandemic that I had a chance to talk to any of the executive leadership of VRChat. But also at Augmented World Expo, I did a couple of interviews with VRChat representatives, Keki Navarre and Ave, talking around the new avatar marketplace. Also talked to Jun Young Ro, who is a new trust and safety lead at VRChat, implementing a lot of different planned changes for trust and safety at VRChat. And so it's an opportunity for me to catch up with Graham just to get a sense of all the different news that's happening now. But also back last year, I published an episode 1408. I did an interview with Kay Guillory that while I was producing that episode, I sort of got on this nostalgia kick of VRChat of going back and looking at different documentaries that people had produced, looking at the very early history. And so I wanted to kind of recount the very early origin stories of VRChat. So I ended up doing a lot of deep dive research that I wrote up in that episode. If you go look at the show notes of 1408, you can kind of see a lot of the key moments of the very early beginnings of what was happening with the launches and the release. And so this was my first conversation that I had a chance to do with Graham since I did that deep dive and kind of recounting some of the different key moments in the production release of VRChat. But also, you know, they're in this midst of trying to figure out like what is going to be the business model that is going to be sustaining of VRChat as a platform. And there are sometimes these cultural differences between what the content creators of VRChat are actually doing. You know, I had a chance to talk to quite a lot of different creators within the Raindance community and other folks of VRChat over the years. And so I just get the sense that a lot of the motivations for why people create content within VRChat is more driven by being in relationship and connected to a community rather than trying to profit or turn it into a professional career. And so obviously there are some really huge productions and people donating a lot of labor in order to create different experiences on VRChat that if they had the option to monetize it, and let's say with events or ticket sales, and that there was the ability for people to buy and to support these creators, they would certainly do that. Although some of that more event-based type of monetization hasn't been quite implemented yet. It's more around asset and avatar creation. And they're trying to figure out like what is the good mix between ways that they can support the creators, ways they can find these pathways of profitability, and yeah, trying to mash with like this emerging gifting culture that's happening within VRChat. And sometimes some of the different directions they're going in, they don't find that they're landing in terms of like the content creators really responding to different monetization strategies. And so it's sort of like this limbo state of them still trying to figure out a lot of those different things. And so just interesting to hear some reflections from Graham on that paradox of trying to find their footing in terms of where they're headed in the future and finding ways that they can kind of turn different dials internally to create either VRChat Plus subscriptions and all those features that they're amping up, but also these other revenue streams that they can both be sustainable as a platform, but also enable content creators to also create a living as well. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of Voices VR Podcast. So this interview with Graham happened on Thursday, September 18th, 2025 at the MetaConnect conference at Meta's headquarters in Menlo Park, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hi, I am Graham Gaylor, one of the co-founders and CEO of VRChat.
Great. Maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into this space.
Sure. So it's been a while. We got started in 2014 when the original Oculus came out as a Kickstarter project. I was, I think, in college at the time, computer science and math. So I had a programming background. I saw the Kickstarter go live. I'd always been a big fan of VR. I had read Ready Player One, Snow Crash, all the fun VR fiction. So I immediately backed it, started, you know, trying to build my own, you know, metaverse product, although I know we don't love to use that word. So taught myself Unity, built an early prototype, posted it to Reddit, and immediately had a little community, you know, form around the product early on. And that's how I met my co-founder, Jesse. Just through that early prototype. And then a couple of months later, you know, Facebook bought Oculus for $2 billion in March 2014. We're like, okay, like, this is probably going to become an industry. Let's do this for real.
Nice. And I met Jesse Jodry at Silicon Valley Virtual Reality Conference on either May 19th or 20th, one of those 2 days. I did an interview with him. Everybody was talking around both Rift Max Theater and VR Chat as sort of like the social VR platforms where there was quite a lot of attendees that were in those programs. And there's another interview that I actually went back and looked at the early history because I was like, oh, wow, Jesse told me he was a co-founder. And by that time he was, but before that time you had started it, he joined in with you. And I remember looking through the release logs and there was release 0.3.5, the first one that he was a part of. And it was basically introducing the ability to upload your own avatars, which my impression was that you weren't like a computer graphics guy and you wanted to, you know, enable this kind of user generated content. And I feel like that decision like set the character for what VR Chat has continued to be. It was like this place where people can create their own worlds and create their own identity in terms of their own embodiment. Curious to hear any of your thoughts and reflections on that, you know, taking me back to that time, but also how that decision has seemingly been a bit of a turning point in terms of a through line, in terms of what has been a consistent thing that has created the magic of VR Chat, where you're giving the people the freedom to create and explore their own worlds as well as their own identity.
For sure. So going back to the beginning, I think, you know, the very first 0.1 version of VR Chat, you know, had no customization. I think there was a single coffee shop world, if you remember that, single avatar that was T-posed. And Jesse's big thing that he believed in was identity. So he was like, hey, I want to help you implement custom avatars. So that was the very first customization aspect in VR Chat. He brought that in very quickly. And then, yeah, that blog post that we wrote about custom avatars came out probably 2 weeks later. It was a very quick iteration. Then, you know, from there, we opened up to worlds, I believe. And, you know, I think that at the time, I wasn't sure that VR Chat or VR was a big opportunity, right? It was still, even post-Facebook acquisition, like, I still was like, oh, you know, is this the right move? All my friends actually from college were going to get jobs in industry. So that's what I was going to do. But Jesse's actually the one that convinced me, like, no, let's go all in on this. This is the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And he was right. So that worked out really well. And, you know, from there, from that Facebook acquisition in 2014, there was lots of hype in 2015, which enabled us to, you know, raise our first round of financing, start growing the team. And then, you know, from there, we have our ups and downs in the space that all of us are very familiar with.
It's been a long time coming in terms of, you know, the commercialization of VR and having a way that you can have these entities that have VC funding, but also find their own revenue streams and economic models. And about a year and 3 months ago in June, there were some layoffs at VR Chat, which I think was probably the first time that you really had to make some really hard decisions strategically in terms of where this company was going to be going in the future. I had a chance to talk to a lot of different people about this since that time. And one of the things that was mentioned to me was that, you know, in some ways, having the ability for people to upload and customize their own avatars and worlds sort of let the asset genie out of the bottle, as it was described to me, where most of these social VR platforms find identity and identity expression as the core and primary way for people to monetize the platform. If you want to customize your identity, you have to pay. Now, VRChat has cultivated this whole community by not doing that, which I think is actually paradoxically in some ways what has made the magic of VRChat in a way that other social VR platforms have come and gone, but you've seemingly found a formula that has allowed people to organically cultivate communities and feel like they really identify. But yet at the same time, you're now adding avatar marketplaces in there as a way of maybe adding new users, is what Kaki Navari was saying, is that there's these two kind of split demographics of like the OGs who are like uploading their own avatars that essentially become game developers to download Unity and do all the design. And so I'm just curious to hear your take on that trajectory and reflecting on that, because on the one hand, it's the magic of VR Chat, but on the other hand, it's sort of like the paradoxical genie out of the bottle dilemma for how to like find the new revenue streams to actually create a sustainable platform.
100%. The open avatar, open world concept, certainly a double-edged sword. I think that we wouldn't be where we are today without that ability in VRChat. I think that's what most people find attractive about the product. Especially in the early days, we were punching way above our weight class in terms of what you can do, because all of our amazing creators were building amazing content through our Avatar SDK, through our World SDK. You know, fast forward to today, hey, we're a business, we need to make money. You know, our core content that we build are our worlds and avatars, and it's really hard to monetize that because you can do it for free through our SDK. So how do you balance that? So I think we're learning. We have launched our avatar marketplace. We were working with creators to build high quality content there. And I think the hypothesis for that is that the avatar marketplace would make it a lot easier to find your identity for a majority of users. For the folks that are willing to download Unity or go out and find their identity or avatar in VRChat, they can always do that. But hey, if we can make it way easier for people to find that, you know, on day one, that's the hope for Avatar Marketplace. But it's a learning game. I think as we learn and expand and talk with creators and talk with users, we'll iterate and grow that into something that, you know, works for our user base and also works for us as a business.
I'm curious to hear your thought on what genre you see VRChat as. Just because as I talk to different people that are involved in VRChat, and some are coming from different orientations, and they'll say, oh, I first started playing this game and da-da-da. And it's like, I never think of VRChat as a game, but there's something around the mindset of people treating it as such. For me, it feels like more of a social platform or a way for people to connect, but there's still kind of the game logic that is there. And there's obviously games on VRChat. And I don't know, if you look at something like Roblox and the monetization strategies, you end up having a lot of game-like things where you buy a game pass and then it like gives you more features that are either like play to win in some cases that are not great. But if you have more of a balance where, oh, you can either grind for 2 or 3 hours, or you could get this game pass and you can save some time to get some more fun parts of the game. So I'm just curious to hear your sense of like the different genres of experiences on VRChat and like how you start to think around this spanning of genres of what VRChat is to you.
Sure. So we definitely, you know, position and think of VRChat as a platform, although even internally we'll still sometimes, you know, refer to it as a game or as our users, you know, as players. So it's definitely a fuzzy area. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we do see ourselves as social first with games versus, you know, I'll consider maybe a Roblox games first with social afterwards. And I think that puts us in somewhat of a unique position in that, you know, for us, you know, the identity and social layer come first. That means we're going to spend more time on kind of the immersive social aspect. And, you know, games will be important, but that is a secondary. That is a thing you do while you socialize. I think this may evolve over time, you know, as we grow, as our user base finds new trends and things that they like, as new technologies come out and, you know, we look into adopting that. I think the most recent way that we think about ourselves is immersive social, which we kind of like that paradigm of, you know, feeling like you are together with the people you care most about. So that's kind of where we are today.
I've done a lot of interviews with folks in VRChat. Raindance is an opportunity for me to kind of check in with what's happening in the VRChat community. And oftentimes I'll have people that go back to like 2018 as a turning point in terms of like huge explosion in the platform. There were a lot of memes that were going around, a lot of content creators that were coming in, and, you know, it kind of led into the pandemic, which then was another catalyst of sorts of people no longer having the ability to hang out with their friends. And so I think there's a lot of people that I've talked to over the years that was an inflection point for them, where they were doing something where they were out in the world with other people a lot. And when that was taken away, VRChat really filled that gap. And so I'm just curious to hear your reflections on, as you look back at these different turning points of the platform. I think the groups was probably another one in terms of like adding groups of the ability for people to self-organize into interest groups that allowed them to create instances and worlds, and, you know, the whole rave and dance scene that's there that came up before the pandemic, but really during the pandemic as well. So just curious to hear how you start to think around these different turning points on the platform.
Sure. I think there's a couple of different types of turning points for VRChat and companies and products that are in a similar space. I think we have kind of external factors that are outside of our control. We have internal factors that are inside our control. And I'd say luck, which is maybe external factors as well. You know, a lot of our growth, if you look at the Steam CCU graph, like there's kind of a story for each of those things. You know, starting with Uganda Knuckles, you know, that virality moment 2017, 2018, that was, you know, somebody created a silly meme avatar. It was picking up on YouTube and Twitch, and you know, we blew up as a result. We then have the Quest 1 and Quest 2 launches, which, you know, external market tailwinds, which were great. We then have COVID, everybody's stuck at home, all online services get a boost. We've got Facebook changing their name to Meta, so everybody's psyched about Metaverse. We've got Roblox IPOing. So all of these kind of factors together put us in a really strong position and, you know, right timing, right place, right time to set us up for success. Now, had we not built the product that we had, if we hadn't implemented groups at the right time, hadn't built, you know, the right customization SDKs at the right time, you know, none of those would have mattered. But it's been a balancing act of those external factors and internal factors. And I think as we've scaled, and frankly, some growth has slowed down over the last couple of years, we've spent a lot of time trying to organize ourselves in a way such that we had more internal factors to help us to grow. What internal levers can we learn to pull and experiment with to understand how to grow despite, you know, what happens in the space? If, you know, new VR headsets launch and we see growth, that is fantastic. But we want to be able to grow despite whatever happens there. So that's been a big learning for us over the years, is how do we learn how to grow ourselves internally? An example of that would be, you know, a mobile app learning how to do performance marketing really well, which is not what we do today. But that's a really important muscle for us to have grown.
I think there's another somewhat paradoxical thing where a lot of times people will do things from more of a gift culture ethos where they want to give their creativity away as a gift to be able to build community and more social capital and relationality and giving back to the community. And so then you have that trajectory of people who are creating. And then as you start to monetize, then it becomes more transactional in a way that the ways that you're monetizing the world that is a different incentive structure that a lot of times when I've talked to like the really hardcore users, they're not as interested in that type of transactional relationship. They're more interested in the creative expression and the relationality of building things. And so I feel like that the Twitch model of people and also Patreon, where people have patronage that are donating to different creators, you have the situation where because of the unfortunate situation where these platform holders are taking 30% cut from Steam and iOS, Android, all these different platform fees. And then on top of that, if VR chat's taking some of that, then it ends up being a 50-50 cut versus if people just go off platform and do their own Patreon, then they can take a much higher percentage of that cut. So then there's like less incentive for them to have the network effects of working within the VR chat economy. So this is something I've noticed over the years, and that there's a lot of split in terms of that more ethos of what makes like VR chat in this kind of unique time of people giving away things in the spirit of the gift, but also as you're trying to figure out what is the monetization scheme that makes sense, that fits within that gifting culture, but also like makes sense in a way that gets away from the transactional nature of the economy into more of this patronage or other ways that, you know, you have the VR chat plus subscription, which is another way for you to be sustained as a platform. But in terms of the content and creator economy, it seems like XR gives us opportunity to create new possibilities for a completely new paradigm. But how do you have this kind of Tarzan economics where you're like still using the same ropes of things that worked in the past, but letting go of that rope and then catching a new rope for you to do something that's the new paradigm that doesn't quite exist yet? So I feel like that's sort of the paradox of VR chat, is that you as a company are trying to find out what that new paradigm is, while also using all the existing things that we know from the past, but mashing between these different cultures. I don't know if that makes sense or like how you start to think about that.
Yeah, to make sure I understand, is this more around like our creators earning through the creator economy or VR chat earning through whatever means?
I think it's both in terms of like if there's layoffs from VR chat's perspective where you have a certain amount of runway, and unless you're cash flow positive and are profitable, you need to both be profitable as a company, but also sustain the creators. So it feels like it's a little bit of both, like you have to solve both of those problems. But how do you start to take into account the culture that's been created that doesn't go against the sort of ethos of this kind of gifting culture that's been the magic of VR chat? And so that's the paradox that as I've been looking at this, that's the thing I keep running into to creators where they'll kind of eschew these more capitalistic aspects and want to preserve that more communal and relationality. But in order for it to sustain, then they have to do something around that, yeah, so just curious to hear some of your thoughts on navigating that.
Sure. So luckily, you know, we have a really incredible community who I think understand the realities of running a business. I think I saw a Reddit post the other day where someone was like, hey, you know, I saw VRChat just took, you know, face tracking for desktop out of VRChat Plus and made it free. Like, that's really exciting. But, you know, I want to make sure that y'all are not going away. Like, you know, I know you're not profitable yet. And that was really great to hear. But from a, you know, VRChat business standpoint, you know, I think a key thing for us is to make sure that we can monetize in a way that aligns with our community, right? You know, we wouldn't be where we are today without them, without our creators. And if, you know, we've seen in the past, you know, we launched EAC, community didn't love that. It was a necessary evil that set us up for success in the future. So we're now very mindful of like, hey, what works well and what doesn't work well. But we're learning, right? I think there's going to be a lot of iteration, a lot of learning. And, you know, you never please 100% of the community, right? Even if, you know, 90% of folks are like, yeah, that's great, there'll be a small majority who are unhappy with whatever direction you go. You know, that said, on the creator side, I think it's a little bit of a different story in that I was surprised to see that many of our creators actually didn't care to earn. We launched Creator Economy. We wanted to get in, like, you know, all of our creators want to say, hey, look, you can quit your job, you can do this full time. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, folks were like, hey, no, I'm not really interested in monetizing. Like, I just, you know, I love doing this. This is my passion. This is art. And we're like, okay, that makes sense. You know, let's, you know, support folks that are interested in doing that. So that's been an interesting, I'd call it a challenge, because it was unexpected. And so I think in the, you know, moving forward, we want to explore ways to align those types of creators, like, hey, okay, you're not interested in monetizing, but you're interested in people, you know, eyeballs or users using your experience. So what, how can we align incentives? You know, is it retention? Is it just people using your product? So I think there's ways to align those well. For the creators who are monetizing, I know the 50-50 split has been challenging for folks. And, you know, folks will look at, hey, you know, whatever, a 10% Patreon or whatever they're taking. I think this goes back a little bit to our avatar marketplace theory in that, you know, as I were a creator and I wanted to earn on VRChat and I was selling on some third-party marketplace, I only need to 2x my sales in VRChat in order to be more successful than on that third-party marketplace. And when you are selling in VRChat, they are a captive audience. You know, you make it super easy for them to purchase. They are already in your game. They already see the thing they want. They just have to press buy versus let me go to an external website, go buy this thing, maybe, you know, install Unity. And we've had a lot of stories of creators who are like, oh yeah, like in my first week, I was making more than my, you know, months of a Patreon or months of Booth or other third-party platforms. So I think we've seen a lot of successes there, but there's still a long way to grow and a lot of learning and a lot of just different ways for creators to monetize. I think we, you know, we have our Patreon-like subscription model. We have our in-world purchases, basically IAP for worlds. We've got our avatar marketplace, and then, you know, we'll probably have many others, you know, upcoming for creators to see what works well for them.
Yeah, and another thing that I've noticed over the years is that big events like Virtual Market that has had partnerships with VRChat get all these promotions, and then you'd go in there and they'd have these custom interfaces to then go offsite to either Booth and Gumroad to have like transactions that happen. And there seems to be like this whole like ecosystem of avatar creators and content creators that has been supported through this external system. And so I'm just curious, in the long run, if the goal is to eventually bring some of that economy back into VRChat to make it, again, easier, just like the avatar marketplace, to buy things, but to, you know, have skins or clothes or other things that would, I mean, I guess it gets into the issue of like, you don't have standard avatars. And so how do you do clothing across a wide variety of different types of avatar types? But just that general idea of if there are like consistent base models or having like wearables or other things, that a lot of that stuff that has been externalized into Booth and Gumroad, if there's in the long run trying to bring back more of an in-game economy for kind of expanding out the avatar marketplace into other aspects of wearables that could be other ways that people can customize their identity, but also contribute to more of an in-game economy rather than something that's external to VRChat.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the dream. In a perfect world, it would be super easy for in VRChat to, you know, build your avatar, you build your base, you know, body, like you're playing Skyrim, and then you've got all of your different accessories and clothing that just fit perfectly to that avatar. And, you know, it's VRChat, so of course you've got humanoid, but you've got everything else from that to, you know, just a cube. So that is something that we'd love to eventually get to. It's non-trivial, and I think we're taking steps to get there. But there will always be external marketplaces, right? You know, Unity is core to our creation experience. So for that group of users who want complete flexibility, they will always be able to use that path. But for the folks who are new or don't necessarily want to use Unity and just want to be able to build their avatar in game, or maybe even do it socially with their friends, they go shopping together and then try on different clothes. I mean, that is the dream that we'd love to work towards. I think it'll take a little bit of time, but it's something, of course, we're thinking about.
Love to hear any reflections on the virtual culture that's coming out of Japan. And obviously, there's a huge anime aesthetic on VRChat that has been a huge influence over the years. But when you look at the different types of things that are happening in the Japanese community, everything from the Yamaha Sync Room that allows super low latency audio channels to be integrated into so that you can have live jazz that's being played and amazing live music. And, you know, it seems to be a huge community that's happening there in Japan from the culture and the avatars. And also just, it feels like Japan is perhaps 5 to 10 years ahead of where we're at from the rest of the world. And so if you're looking to see what's happening in the Japanese community as like an early indicator for where all this might be headed here in the future.
Totally. No, we love our Japanese community, and they do seem to be years ahead of where everybody else is going. So they are a good indicator. I was in Tokyo a couple of months ago and attended some conference that I thought was just a conference. It was a full-on VRChat conference, and there were probably thousands of people there. I was blown away by just the sheer number of folks who love VRChat, and their community is amazing. I think we actually look to Japanese communities to see how onboarding or retention are done right. There's a specific, at least one, maybe multiple kind of onboarding Japanese worlds and communities who specifically they will onboard when a new Japanese user comes in. Like, that's the first world you go to. You have somebody there who's walking you through the ropes. And of course, retention is so much higher as a result. So, you know, we look at that and say, hey, like, could we scale that to all of VRChat? So they're definitely ahead of the curve. You know, they build some amazing pieces of content as well. You know, we're very lucky to have them as a community and, you know, want to foster what they're doing.
Yeah, just even hearing the origin stories of the virtual market, of wanting to have a marketplace for artists to have a place to sell their wares, it feels like it's such a community-driven place. And also, like, it seems like the Japanese community is also very supportive of the VRChat Plus, at least from what I've heard anecdotally, in terms of, like, wanting to ensure that they're contributing back to supporting and ensuring the livelihood of VRChat. I feel like there's a range of different ways of people responding to this type of gifting culture and patronage, where some people are very open to contributing to something like a patronage model. Ideally, we'd be in a place where VRChat would be cash flow positive and everything if everybody that used the platform was a VRChat Plus subscriber. You know, maybe you'll get there at some point, but it feels like that's also probably a good idea to diversify all the different revenue streams. So just curious to hear how the VRChat Plus has gone. There wasn't really a lot of things when it first launched, but as time has gone on, you're adding more and more stuff. And that if you see that there is a nice balance point where you feel like it's grown to the point where you're getting some traction, but also having these other things to flesh out to get to this goal of overall being profitable. So just curious to hear how VRChat Plus has been going and how it's been changing and growing over the years.
Yeah. So when we initially launched VRChat Plus, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, it was a pretty light offering. It was really a, hey, if you love us and want to support us, you know, please consider subscribing. And I think it's funny, that first day we could see like everybody who came online just for like a couple of minutes to subscribe, just to support us. And I think we had no business having as many subscribers that first couple of months as we did. You know, we just had an amazing community who wanted to support us. And really, we would add value to it over time, but there wasn't a ton of value. And, you know, it continued to grow steadily because, you know, revenue wasn't really our focus. You know, once we had our riff last summer and the market kind of changed on us, we kind of recognized, hey, look, like, it's not what we want to be doing, but we're a business. We need to start growing our revenue. And the obvious lever to explore was our VRChat Plus offering. A, to say, hey, we have all these loyal subscribers. Like, let's start adding more value for them. And then B, you know, we obviously want to grow our subscribers. Let's see what kind of value we can add to get them excited and subscribe to VRChat Plus. So one of the big learnings for us was both our hypothesis and learning was to treat VRChat Plus as a live service, meaning that, hey, like every month there's something new for you, whether, you know, it's a feature or more recently we've been offering unique content. And that's been really successful. And I think we've seen great growth from that. So really great to see then a support from the community. But again, like almost everything I'm sharing today, just a lot of exploration, a lot of learning. And that's a newer mindset, you know, on the team over the last couple of years. It's like, hey, everything that we do, what can we learn from it? And that's been really successful in growing that subscriber base.
Yeah, and I had a chance to do a number of interviews recently around like the trust and safety on VR chat, discussions around not safe for work, adult content on top of children on the platform. There's age verification that's now there. But it seems like, you know, obviously you don't want to have kids that are under 18 being exposed to adult content, especially in a social VR platform, and for all the different opportunities for predators to take actions within VR chat. So it seems like that there's been a number of conflicts between what the terms of service say versus what the community guidelines say. So terms of service saying you can't have any of this adult content, and then the community guidelines saying as long as it's in a private instance, it's okay. So there's been kind of like a liminal gray zone. And talking to June, your new trust and safety lead, there seems like over time the desire to sort of like consolidate some of those different policies to make it more clear, but to also just have more of a professionalized strategy for trust and safety to be more responsive, but also have things that are more strategic rather than reactive to things that are happening. So just curious to hear some of your thoughts of this decision to bring in June to kind of like reevaluate how to approach trust and safety.
Yeah, no, we're very lucky to have found June. He's done an amazing job so far. And now I think you've hit on a very critical point for VR chat. You know, trust and safety for all online services is always a tricky thing, but even more so for virtual spaces. And it's something that we have iterated on over the years, but most recently really striving to make more investments in that space and make sure that it's a place for, you know, as many people as we can get in there and make everybody feel safe. So June has a great strategy outlined to get us to a good place, including making our terms of service and community guidelines much more clear so folks understand what is allowed and what isn't allowed, ultimately with the goal of keeping everybody safe. You know, most recently, we've been exploring, you know, what age verification can do for the platform, understanding how we can utilize those types of services to keep people safe, you know, exploring, you know, the types of behavior and content that is and isn't allowed on the platform. You know, are there things that certain people are able to see versus other people? You know, a lot of, again, a lot of learning, a lot of exploration, a lot of iteration to see what works and what doesn't work. But I think we're just at the beginning. I think as we scale as an audience, it becomes even more important to make sure that people come into the product and feel safe and welcome. And, you know, not only from an ethics perspective, but as a business perspective, right? I think it's a pretty clear signal that we've seen in other products that, hey, if you have a really safe and welcoming experience, your retention is going to be higher. So it's in our best interest to make sure as a business that we're investing appropriate here and making sure that people feel welcome and safe coming to the product. Mm.
Yeah, one of the things I've noticed about VR chat is that a lot of your employees are also community members that have been a key part of the community that have then been brought on to become employees. And so this pathway of being hardcore users into becoming employees. Just curious from your own experience, do you go and hang out and explore different worlds still in VR chat? Do you still have time to kind of like hang out and chill or go to some dance parties or go explore some of Dr. Morrow's latest worlds of like the organism, epilogue one or two or ritual? Just curious to hear if you have a chance to actually kind of explore around and chill out in VR chat still.
Not as much as the early days, but certainly do make time for it weekly. You know, we have our team meetings in VR chat, and often we have our team bonding events in VR chat because we are fully remote. And typically, you know, once I'm in those and when we're done and we're wrapped up the meeting, I'm like, oh, what new content's out there for me to go check out? You know, I think different people have different ways they use VR chat. For me, I love interactive content. So I'm always, you know, jumping through the new game worlds, what new interesting mechanics have people implemented. And then if I get something really, I'm really excited about, I'll start like blasting invites to people. And they're like, oh, Graham needs me. Let me join in. And then I'm just wanting to play some game with them. But no, I love seeing all the new stuff that people are building. I get, you know, very excited when there's some new mechanic that works really well. And then, you know, I tell everybody about it, get really excited about it, and then it kind of cools off. But not as much as I used to, but still get in there to make sure I'm up to date with the latest and greatest.
Did you see Lukuza's latest world of the bullet time?
I've seen bullet time, but that's been in production a long time. So I don't know what version, if there's been a recent update.
Yeah, I think he launched it recently, like a year ago or so. I think it was at Rain Dance, but
nice.
If you like the game worlds, I think you should probably check it out.
No, there was, I don't know if it was bullet time. There were some other, the thing that really blows me away is when I go into an experience and I'm like, wow, this could be a standalone product. And they typically tend to be in PC VR or you know, whatever, PC VR chat. But I'd love for people to bring these to Quest. We love it on Quest. I'm a Questie. But the stuff that people are able to create, I think Slashco VR is the most recent one I've seen where I'm like, wow, this could be a Steam title. So yeah, no, all that stuff's amazing.
And finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of virtual reality and social experiences might be and what they might be able to enable?
Yeah, so I think the ultimate vision for us is to connect, you know, a billion people in immersive social and make sure that people are able to spend time with the people they care about, even if they, you know, aren't together in the real world. And, you know, today we're still very early on that journey. But as technology evolves, as our platform grows, as the world changes, I think that we'll have many opportunities to move towards that vision. You know, VR has not grown as quickly as I think anybody would have liked. But I am, you know, hopeful, you know, looking at our new AR glasses at Connect this year. You know, the big thing is the Meta Ray-Bans. You can kind of see it all converging. I think we're a ways away from our glasses that are VR and AR. But I think that's probably what it's going to take to get us to that number.
Great. So anything else that's left unsaid that you'd like to say to the broader immersive community? Any final thoughts?
Thank you to the community. You know, it's fun to be able to connect with all of you. So if you do ever see me anywhere, I don't get out very much, but please come say hi. You know, it's always great to see what folks are up to. I mean, you know, thank you for supporting VR Chat through the years.
Awesome. Well, Graham, thanks so much for joining me here on the podcast. It's good to see you here on the conference circuit again. I know we would run into each other pretty frequently from like 2014 to 2019. I would usually talk to at least one person from VR Chat. So post-pandemic now, making these appearances. And yeah, I think as I've had the opportunity to explore a lot of different experiences on VR Chat, I feel like it's this unicorn of sorts in a way that is able to really capture the magic of what's possible with user-generated content. And, you know, I just did an interview with Dr. Morrow that I'll be airing here as part of my Venice Immersive coverage. And he's one of these creators that has just completely blown my mind to show the possibility for how to explore the creative potentials of XR and virtual reality. And yeah, it's been great to see how VR Chat's been this real proving ground for both the world building and identity expression. And yeah, I've enjoyed my time in VR Chat and all the different communities are there, and just appreciate you taking the time to share a little bit more about where things are at now and where you may be taking it all here in the future. So thanks again for joining me here on the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you, Kent. It's great to be here and see you.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast. And if you enjoy the podcast, then please do spread the word, tell your friends, and consider becoming a member of the Patreon. This is a supportive podcast. And so I do rely upon donations from people like yourself in order to continue to bring this coverage. So you can become a member and donate today at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.